You've entered Bookstorm with Kristen Civiletto and me, Chris Storm. This is a podcast devoted to best-selling books that matter, books that make a difference. We're diving down deep with beloved authors about their stories. We're exposing hot-button topics and heartfelt themes, the issues that affect each of us in our own lives, as siblings, parents, partners, friends, as human beings. We're braving new ideas, fresh thoughts, hard lessons, and important truths. Those kinds of things that stay with us long after we turn the last page and close the book. Welcome back to Bookstorm Podcast. All of you book lovers, you're going to be very excited about who we have with us here today because you have heard of this book. You may have already read it. It's very hot, very buzz right now, trending. Kristen and I adored it. We're here to talk about The Guest with the author B.A. Paris. B.A., welcome to Bookstorm.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here with you.
Well, we're pretty excited that you are joining us from a cottage deep in the Hampshire countryside of England. Sounds so beautiful.
It does. And usually I am, but actually I'm in the house in France at the moment.
Oh. So
and that's why there's all bare walls, because it's just a little cottage in France. And I've put some books there to make it look a little bit prettier. But otherwise it's just really blank walls. But normally my writing place is Hampshire, a little cottage in Hampshire, right out in the countryside.
But France is also a very beautiful place to have a podcast from.
It is.
Very romantic, and it goes with the entire mysterious theme of the book. So B.A. Paris is a New York Times and Sunday Times best-selling author. She has 7 million copies of her book sold in translated to 41 languages. Wow. 3 of her novels have been optioned for major screen adaptations, and there's a film that's in production right now based on her novel, The Breakdown. It's titled Blackwater Lane, so you can all look for it. It stars Minka Kelly, Maggie Grace, and Dermot Mulroney. And this sounds fabulous. Now, let me tell you a little bit about her background. She has lived in France for most of her adult life before becoming an author. She actually worked in finance as a trader. How interesting. And then an English teacher. B.A.'s husband and she worked and ran a language school together while bringing up their 5 daughters. And I love this about you. It was only after turning 50 that you started writing. When not writing, I saw this on your bio and I had to tell our listeners, she enjoys spending time with the other man in her life. Well, he's well over 80 years old. He's a little wrinkly, but Henry the tortoise is really good company. Is that a pet?
It is. But he has an amazing story. And one day I'm going to write a book about Henry, because he was actually, when we moved into our house in France, he was already there. And we thought the previous owners had left him behind. And in fact, they said, no, he comes with the house. And then we traced the lady that had actually bought the tortoise, and she was in her 90s by then. And she'd found him walking across a bridge in Paris when she was a young girl and had brought him home. So we know he's well over 80 years old and he's got the most amazing story. So
he is the family mascot. I love something like that. And before I close my little intro, I have to quote the author Mary Kubica, who is a good friend of Bookstorm. She's been on our show twice, and I love what she says about this book, The Guest. She says it's unsettling and it's addictive. Yes, Mary, Kristen and I could not agree more. We loved it, and we're super excited to have B.A. Paris with us today.
Oh, thank you.
B.A., I give our listeners just a summary of what's going on in the book, but I do not give away any spoilers. It's a little tricky to do with your story because we've got a lot of twists and turns. But if you'll allow me, in your story, we meet Iris and Gabriel. They are a couple and they're returning home from a holiday. And when they walk in the door, they're a little surprised to see one of their good couple friends. Her name is Lore. She's made herself at home. She's got a key to the place. But it quickly becomes a little bit tense because she takes some liberties. She's wearing Iris's clothes. She eventually rearranges the kitchen. She's pushing some of those little boundaries. Now, Laura is there because she has walked out on her husband, Pierre, and they were all good friends, the four of them. And he had just confessed to an affair and a secret child. And this is something that Laura is trying to process of what to do. Now, Iris and Gabriel want to be supportive, but her, you know, their friend's mood is a little unpredictable, and it's getting a little bit unbearable to have her there. They have a brief respite because they've got a new couple that moved into their small town. So it's been nice getting to know them. But along with them, they brought a gardener who is a little bit mysterious and has kind of a checkered past. And everybody starts spending a lot of time with one another. Now, soon, secrets start to unravel from their past. And some of them have some very deadly, deadly connections. Did you want to add anything to that summary? And I'm trying hard not to give things away.
No, I think that's an absolute brilliant summary. That is exactly what the book is about. So yes, it's really about the interaction between these six characters. Exactly, the six characters, very different, all going through different things in their lives. In fact, I think the only one that's not really going through something is Hugh, who is Esme's husband. He's kind of a little bit out of it all, but all the others have got either secrets that they're keeping or, as you say, checkered past. So of course, when they all get together and find out a little bit more about each other, there's going to be some explosions.
I love that you brought up Hugh, by the way, because he was kind of a voice of sanity in this whole story, and he kept everything grounded. I loved that character, and I'm sure we'll get into that in a little bit.
Yeah, good. Lovely.
All six of the characters were amazing. And here's one thing I have to say for our listeners. One of the most frightening aspects of this psychological thriller is that we saw people we know inside some of these characters. They were very realistic. We saw this sort of trending common practice of entitled and selfish people who prey upon and use others who might be more empathetic. The empath longs to help someone, to ease their pain and bring them back to life. We see it every day. Can you expand upon how some of your characters, and maybe even us in the real world, how do we become so easily entrapped in these egotistic schemes?
Well, I think that when you're going through something, you know, like Laura is something traumatic. She's found out that her husband has had a child with another woman, and he always told her he didn't want children. So she has given up her any desire she had to be a mother to suit him. So she's going through this really tough time, and she does become very egotistical. She thinks of herself. She doesn't really think of the effect that she's having on Iris and Gabriel. And because they're such good friends, and it's true, Iris and Gabriel want to help her like we would want to help a friend in need. You know, we'd be happy to let a friend stay. But then she doesn't seem to be moving on. And I think for Iris, she's a very kind person and she just wants to help her friend. But no matter how much you like a friend, it's when you live with them a long time that you really get to know them. I think sometimes it's like if you have friends to stay, you can be really good friends with somebody, but I think you actually don't really get to know your friends until you've actually gone on holiday with them or they've come to stay with you for a period of time. And then you see all their little you find the little habits and things that they do, and you know, and it's different. And you know, you have to really get on well with people to spend a lot of time with them. And I think that in this book, Iris has never realized that Laura is quite so needy because she's only ever seen her when they've gone on holiday for a week and when she's always been in a really good mood because everything's going well. But now, you know, 3 weeks on into her staying with them, the cracks are beginning to show. Iris can't have any time to herself. Laura is always there. And, you know, if Iris is a little bit like me, and I think we always have a little bit of ourselves in the characters. You do need your own space. You like your own space. I mean, I like my own space. Even if I'm surrounded by people, I like to have those 5 minutes every now and again where you can get away. And Iris can't do this. So we do become entrapped. I think we become entrapped in that behavior when we're going through bad times. We become, think only of ourselves. And then the person that wants to give, once you've started giving, it's very hard to draw back. It's very hard to say, well, actually, I don't want you to stay anymore. It's very difficult. So we do become entrapped.
I loved the relationship between them, the friendship, and we could all relate to it. But I think day 4, I was voting, Get Lore out of there. I can't stand her being in there anymore. I must have low tolerance.
Day four. I can't remember what Lore did on day four, but it must have been something that really annoyed you.
We can all relate. I loved it so much.
Yeah, those uncomfortable conversations, there were a lot of those in this story where you were, the underlying tension was there. That was great. I wanted to ask you about this. Your book really showed us how one impulsive choice in your life can set you on a trajectory that changes everything. And, you know, some people lean into that and they try to learn and do better. And then some people, I think, are just defined by this one choice. And mm-hmm. I wanted to see if you wanted to expand upon that a little bit, because that was a very interesting theme in your story.
Yeah, I think, you know, it can go two ways. When you make a bad choice, you can either, and I read something the other day, and I think it's so true. If you learn something from your bad choice, it's not such a bad choice. You know, it's like, if you can learn from that and learn something, then you can't really think of it as a bad choice, because you've actually, you know, progressed as a person, you've matured as a person. And yeah, I think there's two things. You make a bad choice in life and you can let it define you. You can let it define you. And you have to be quite strong to say, okay, I'm not going to let that define me, because we always hark back to the past and to things we've done and that we regret. So it's really hard just to say, right, I'm not going to think about it anymore and I'm going to get on with my life. And I know which character you're talking about. And to a sense, that's what this character does do, tries to just block it out in a way and just think, okay, I'm not going to think about it anymore. But then, of course, the past has a habit of catching up with us as well. And that's what happens in this case.
Yeah, I was thinking about in situations maybe involving divorce, where you have your beautiful children and you would never change that, but that one choice did define the rest of your life, you know, as a parent and as an ex-spouse. So Yes. This, you had some big themes running through here, and I thought that was a really interesting one.
But that's so true what you say about, you know, divorce, because couples can end up hating each other, but then they say, but he's the father of my children.
That's right.
And so, and I think that's much easier for a woman to say than maybe a man. You know, a woman will say, but he's the father of my children, so I can't let him go completely. And, you know, and it's true. And then they say, but if, you know, if I hadn't met him, even though he was maybe a really bad person or whatever, I wouldn't have the children I have. So it's really strange, isn't it? It's that choice that you make, but there can be some good that comes out of it.
Yeah, maybe it's something we need to remind our children of too, if you are in that situation, because Yes. They're irreplaceable. And you know, I once heard a child say to me, well, there'd be four other kids with somebody else. No, you are irreplaceable and unique. And those are beautiful things.
They wouldn't be the same children if you'd had them with somebody else.
That's right.
And you love the children that you have. So you can't imagine, well, it'd be impossible to imagine what other children might have been like.
So true.
It's a very healthy way to look back on your past, because we all make mistakes. Our life is a series of choices. And we can either sit here and say we made a lot of horrible choices, or we can say these certain choices helped me to learn, grow. I have wisdom. It propelled me in a different direction. And this happened in the book. Now, let me say one other thing that I liked. In every good mystery, there are assumptions. We all make them. You showed us through the secret motives and internal longings of your characters how quickly some assumptions can turn into big trouble. I had to ask you, as the author, in the solving of a good mystery, can you expand upon why assumptions and what ifs are necessary, but when in a mystery and in the real world, do we need to say, now I need some good solid facts to back these up?
I think when you're writing a mystery, you know, you have to have characters assuming things about other characters, because that's how the book moves on. You know, you have to have that clash of characters, or you have to have something. So you make assumptions, you know, and that's fine in a book. But in real life, we all make assumptions about people we meet. But if you're going to actually accuse somebody or tell people what you think, then you better have the facts to back it up. Because, you know, we make assumptions about everybody. You know, we look at people's Facebook pages or whatever social proof, and we make assumptions about them. And we might say, I really don't like that person, but actually you don't really have anything to back it up. And I think, you know, you can get away with a lot in a book. you know, and you have to have your characters making assumptions about others, and you don't have to reveal whether they're right or wrong until further on in the story. But yeah, I think it's a whole different thing in real life. You know, if you're going to assume that somebody is an evil person or a very good person, you need to know, you know, you need to have the facts. So making assumptions, we all do it on a daily basis. You know, you can go into a shop and a shop assistant might not be very nice, and you can think, oh, she's horrible, you know, but maybe she's just having a bad day. You know, and I think that's what you have to do. You just have to say, you can't just make assumptions. And it's judging, isn't it, really? It's judging people. And I think we have to be very careful about that.
I like that. And in here, as a skilled writer, you led us towards some assumptions in the solving of this mystery. And we almost had developed some hypotheses. That's half the fun of it, because we're solving it along with you. But then we've got to be able to pull away from those and look at the facts too, which is, it's very intriguing. You really accomplished that in a great way.
Thank you. And I think that is the role of a, you know, if we're writing a mystery or a thriller, we have to, you know, we want our readers to have a good time while they're reading it. So, you know, you do try and lead your readers astray a little bit. You send them down different paths because that's half the fun of it for them. They go, I know who it is. I know what's going to happen next. And actually, I had a great thing because my daughter was reading the guest. One of my daughters was reading it. And so she was sending me WhatsApp messages saying, this is this, you know, and I just said no comment. And I laughed because everything she said was wrong, but I just let her, I just put no comment. And she's saying, no, but I know now he or she, this, you know, and she'd tell me what she thought was happening. And I'd just say no comment. And at the end, you know, she said, oh my God, I was so wrong about everything. But I think that gave her, you know, it was fun for her to read it because, you know, and even if you have your assumptions dashed each time, you know, everything that you thought, and then you find out it's not that, it's still quite good fun to say, oh my God, I was wrong, you know, about it.
We love to be tricked, and we don't want the answer easily. We want to have to work really hard for it. And you did that. Thank you.
Now, BA, as I was reading The Guest, I kept thinking about a quote that I've read recently, and I wanted to ask you about this. Here's the quote: a lie leads a man from a grove into a jungle. Now, one of your characters never learned the truth of the statement, lies beget more lies. Why do some people convince themselves that they can always stay ahead of the truth or that web of lies that they have woven?
Yeah, I think either they're overconfident, they're completely confident, or they're delusional. Because let's face it, lies usually catch up with you in the end. I mean, you can maintain a lie for 30 years, but at some point, somebody's going to say, actually, that doesn't add up, or something is going to happen, or somebody from your past is going to turn up, you know, and tell everybody that actually, you know, that isn't what happened, or that. And I think just some people are very confident. It's like these tricksters, they just think they're going to get away with it forever. And all they need is a really good sleuth or a person to say, actually, I'm going to look into this a bit more. This person, I'm sure he's doing something dodgy. And, you know, the past will catch up with him. But some people are just very cocky and very confident, and they think they can get away with telling lies forever. It's like the men that have two families, you know, and there was a great case in England a few years ago when one family lived on one side of the moor and the other lived on the other side of the moor. And he used to just flip between the two. Neither one knew that the other families, they just thought he was working away. And he was spending, you know, like a week with one family and then a week with another family. In the end, of course, it all caught up with him, but he was super confident. He had children with both of them. And I don't know how long he thought he could carry on doing that. But I think there's a book in there as well. But, you know, it's incredible. Some people are just so sure that they're never going to be found out. And I think it's very rare that somebody goes to the grave having maintained a lie all their life.
Yeah, I agree. And I think trying to maintain that lie or lies, because it becomes lies, is very emotionally taxing. I think there's a lot of stress and anxiety you've now introduced into your life that just never goes away. There's always that cloud following you.
I think it's true. And as you said, it leads to a jungle. Because it does. You start off with one lie, but then you have to tell another to cover that lie, and then another lie to cover the second lie you've told. And so it just grows and grows. And what was just one lie in the beginning just becomes this enormous thing, like a jungle, and you just get entrapped by it. And at the end of the day, I think even you don't know whether you're coming or going with the lies you've told. You can't remember what you've said to one person and what you've said to the other, which is why actually it's always best just to be truthful and not tell that lie in the first place, because, you know, you do get, you know, even if you tell a little white lie, like we've all done, then suddenly it'll come back to bite you, because, you know, it's just, you might tell somebody, oh, I said this, didn't really mean it though. I told her she looked lovely in that dress, but actually, and then that person might go and tell them. So you've told a white lie and it's going to come back to bite you. So it's better just to be honest, but it's hard sometimes to be honest, isn't it?
Yes. As the writer of psychological thriller, do you believe that sometimes these characters in the books and in real life begin to believe their own lies? Like maybe they're weaving a fantasy world that they want to convince themselves that they live in. So they're telling themselves the same lies that they're telling other people, creating a pretend existence that they want everyone to believe, including them.
I think that can happen. I'm just thinking of cases where people, you know, tell somebody they meet that they're actually working for the Secret Service and they're a spy. And, you know, they actually maintain that for me. And I think they are actually convinced in the end that they are. I mean, they have to, because they have to live that role. And it's the kind of they're playing out a fantasy that they have. But, you know, I find that incredible. That people actually, you know, they take on a persona and then they actually believe that they are that person. And it's quite scary how we can delude ourselves to that extent. And I don't know what happens when it all falls apart. I think you must just feel that you've got nothing left, because it's like your whole being has been taken away from you.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, after no talking doubt. To you, I'm not believing anyone ever again. I'm going to question everybody.
Well, BA, we loved this book. I mean, The Guest is one of those books. It delivers the excitement, the thrills, and a lot of them, you don't see them coming. So we just loved it. And we want to thank you so much. But before we let you go, we just want to ask, what's on your radar? We're wondering if you could share that with our listeners.
Do you mean personally, writing-wise?
Writing-wise, what's coming up next for you?
Yes. So I am writing, I'm writing my next book. So I can tell you just a little bit about it, because I haven't finished writing it yet. I know how it's going to end, though. I always know my beginnings and my ends. So I know how my book's going to end. It's just a matter of getting there. So it's about a young girl. Well, actually, she's not a young girl now, but she has a past. Like most of my characters. So she's very happy. She's just met a new man. And not long after she meets him, she thinks she has a stalker. And she thinks it's probably somebody from her past, because then we learn all about her past and why she could possibly have a stalker. And then she thinks, but actually she's made a new circle of friends and maybe it could be somebody from my present. So it's basically for her trying to figure out who, or if anybody is stalking her, or if it's just her imagination, because she feels that her past is catching up on her and she hasn't been truthful about her life to her new man. So, yeah, it's another one of these, intriguing, lots of suspense, lots of tension, I hope. I hope it's a page turner. So that's going to be my next book.
That sounds fantastic. And we would love for you to come back and talk about it with us. We absolutely adore your writing. And I know our listeners are going to want to connect with you. I want to tell them how. You have a beautiful website, baparis.com. You can also be found on Instagram, on Facebook, on X. And I think you also have, do you have a newsletter also that people can connect?
Yes, I do have a newsletter. So if you go onto my website, you can subscribe to my newsletter. And I often do giveaways and things. And I'll tell you, sometimes there's a free short story that I've written. You know, there's little competitions and things and book recommendations. So yes, please do sign up to my newsletter if you'd like to have a little bit more news about me.
Oh, wonderful. I know our listeners will. And thank you again for your time and your insights. We just loved the book and love talking with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much for the interview. Bye-bye then.
Bye. Kristen, another fantastic psychological thriller from B.A. Paris. And there were so many aspects that I loved in this. I have to ask you, what do you think about this game that one of the characters played? It's called the If Only game. If only I had taken a different path that day. If only I left an hour earlier. If only I've attended a different college. If only I had not eaten at that restaurant. And then the series of choices, you realize has changed the trajectory of your life. Do you feel guilty about those choices, or how do you handle that?
I don't know, but I think people ask themselves that question probably once a week, because if only, you're right, it's something we do psychologically in our own mind. And how could you not? Because chance meetings, chance encounters, that's how we develop friends. That's how we find people we marry, right? That's how we accept a job, a little chance meeting with somebody. I don't know. I think you could make yourself crazy, though, if you ask if only about every single one of those chance encounters. I don't know. What do you think? Do you ask yourself that question?
Yes. And I like what you said and BA said, that when you're looking at these things, if only I had done something different, also take time to look at the positive that came out of it. Like you talked about your children. We can be so focused on the negative in the if only, instead of the positive. I'm saying this in a situation where there is some positive, right? Because you can get into all kinds of things. What did you think about this? I found this in the book, blaming, how easily we can blame someone else for our problems and our mistakes. Well, they should have told me. Well, they shouldn't have told me. Well, this is all their fault. I see us doing this a little bit in the real world, even myself, when we don't want to step up and face the fact that we made a mistake. How do you feel?
Yeah. Well, sometimes too, that's a process where your initial reaction is blame and looking for some reason that this happened. But, you know, I think as we let things settle on us and contemplate, that's where we start to see where maybe some of our choices contributed to that situation, or maybe it is somebody else's fault. But I do think, again, you can go into these negative places, if only, and blame. Those are two places that'll keep you kind of stuck.
Easy. You know? And one more question that really I thought was intriguing. In the story, people began to tire of Laura's separation problem with her husband. She moves in and it's all Laura all the time. When do someone else's troubles become boring to us? This sounds very cold, but I think there is a boundary there where we can only listen to it for so long. And then what happens? Do we say, you got to pull yourself up and do something about this finally?
Well, I heard your threshold was 4 days.
So with Laura who comes in and takes over the master bedroom. She's wearing all of the clothes. She's changing the kitchen. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, somebody's got to put an end to this quick.
Well, I think I get frustrated when people have solutions that they can choose and they don't choose them. But then they keep going back to the problem and vocalizing their concern about the problem. And, you know, I'm a person generally of action. So that's where my threshold starts getting tested. Do you feel that way too?
I agree. I like that answer.
Yeah. Well, we had a fantastic time discussing this book. I love BA. We have long adored her writing. So I'm so glad that she came on the show. And I want to tell you about some of our upcoming authors that we have. We have an exciting lineup. We have Nick Petrie, Susan Mallory, Ashley Elston, Wabgisha Grice, Liza Palmer, Lisa Unger, Heather Gudenkoff, CJ Box, Benjamin Stevenson, Kate Quinn and Janie Chang, Mary Kubica, Christopher Reich, Amiko Jean, Bonnie Jo Campbell, J.D. Barker, Dervla McTiernan, Scott Carson, who writes as Michael Corita, Kate White, Lisa Wingate, Hank Philippi Ryan, Ramona Ossibel, Jill Shalvis. Some of those names you're going to recognize because they've been on our show a couple times. In fact, we have some three-peats that have been on the show. We love when our authors come back. We love hearing from you. Thank you for sharing our socials. We want you to subscribe and keep on doing that. You can find us on Facebook at bookstormpodcast.com, at our website. You can find us on X. We are on YouTube. Just search for Bookstorm and Podcast. We should come right up. And listeners, we have you in 80 countries and territories, all 50 U.S. states, 1,600 plus cities. We are so grateful that you are listening and tuning in. Till next time, listeners, one of the best ways to brave the storm is to dive down deep into life-changing fiction.
Thank you.